Listen up, we've got one last chance to double your impact when you donate during this May fundraiser. It's Match Monday, and the Investors Challenge Fund is matching donations today only up to $25,000. We need to put every dollar of these funds to use for our newsroom in the months ahead so we can keep you and people across the country informed. Give right now and generously, please, at marketplace.org/givetech. Tough times get tougher for Tesla. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Lily Jamali. It's Friday, which means it's time for Marketplace Tech Bytes Week in Review. OpenAI has unveiled its own deepfake detection software and is allowing a small group of disinformation researchers to use it. We'll look at why and why now. Speaking of artificial intelligence, Apple this week unveiled a new suite of iPads. Just in case you forgot, they still make those. The company announced its new iPad Pro will, among other features, run on an AI-powered processing chip. But first, a sales slowdown has hit electric car maker Tesla pretty hard of late. Now, the tech news site Electrek reports there's been another wave of layoffs this week, directly affecting the company's software, service, and engineering departments. This after last week's mass layoff of Tesla's entire supercharger unit. Joanna Stern, senior personal tech columnist at the Wall Street Journal, has been tracking reaction to the news.
If you've been on X, formerly Twitter, which is Elon Musk's social media platform, you can also come across lots of people who are or now former employees talking about how they were just suddenly let go and the shock they were in because they just didn't expect this. I think that's been a lot of the reaction too. Last week, we heard that Tesla was cutting back the majority of its supercharger team. That's the team that's responsible for the big charging network in the US and across the world. And that was shocking to so many people, not only because Tesla has led the way in this, but Tesla also recently made partnerships with Ford, GM, Rivian, all these other EV makers to allow these other EV makers to charge at Tesla chargers. And so now it's like, what happens to this great new futuristic charging network that we thought was going to be the backbone, at least of the US charging network?
Do we have a sense at this point of what it does mean? I know you are somebody who's very much looking forward to the expansion of that network as a Ford EV owner who was excited about being able to plug into the Tesla superchargers wherever you wanted to go.
Yeah, I mean, the Journal and other publications have reported that upcoming or the new locations, the construction has either been stopped or deals have been stopped at this point. So kind of unclear how that grows. Obviously, they seem to have enough staff and they have enough technical resource to keep that network up and running. But of course, the big fear is that the quality and the size of it starts to deteriorate. But I think the big thing Elon Musk has been stressing and stressed in the earnings call, I believe it was last week, which is Tesla can't just become another commodity EV player. They are at the top of the market now, but they are starting to see those sales wane. They have seen the hit that has taken on the stock. And so they are looking for ways to differentiate themselves to not just be another EV maker. And so Musk has said he wants to focus on autonomy, wants to focus on robotics, and seems to me he's cutting in these places, and analysts believe that he's cutting in these places to then reinvest into these other places that would show differentiation and growth.
Yeah, back to autonomy. We hear that time and time again. It's the holy grail, but it has eluded many who have tried before. So we'll keep an eye on that. Next to OpenAI, Tuesday, the company announced it's going to share new deepfake detection software with a small group of disinformation researchers, according to the New York Times, so they can test the tool in real world situations and help pinpoint ways that it can be improved. Joanna, what do we know about what this software can do, at least in OpenAI's telling of it?
Yeah, so this is pretty exciting. The company has actually been talking about this and have talked to me numerous times in on the record and off the record interviews saying, we're working on this. And now here they finally are saying, okay, we have software that can purportedly, they say, they believe, identify 98.9% of images created with OpenAI's DALL-E image generator. Previously, there's been no real software that could identify that these images were made by AI, which is crazy, right? I mean, we're flying blind to the fact that was this made by a human, an illustrator, a photographer, or was this made by AI? And so the company is saying they now have a tool. That tool is not available for everyone. They're releasing it right now to researchers to try it, I'm assuming to test how it works, to test the actual accuracy of it. But it's a big leap in the sense that, okay, there is a tool that can at least recognize with what they say, a very strong degree of accuracy, what is made by AI.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a good timing for this, given how close we are to the election and all the questions that we have about, you know, when are we going to get better tools to be able to spot this stuff?
It is good news, and I'm definitely excited about it, but I don't want to give listeners this false sense of security. What it won't do is recognize AI images made by other systems, right?
So yes, this is important.
Yeah, if it was an image made by Midjourney or Stability or one of Google's Gemini image creators, it wouldn't recognize those. And so there's not, let's say, a universal tool for this at the moment. And honestly, it seems like that would be quite hard to do.
I'm glad you brought that up. So this tool is not designed for those other popular generation tools. So thank you for that, Joanna. And I just want to quickly ask you about the partnership with academic researchers, because we know from OpenAI's perspective, they want to kickstart this new research. But what's in it for the researchers?
Well, I mean, the researchers do a lot of work for OpenAI, and OpenAI has continuously said they are research-focused organization. Sure, they have a for-profit arm, but they really want to be at the forefront of AI research. And so this is a big leap, and they want these researchers to test this out. Of course, for researchers, they get to test this out, probably test out some of their own workings and academic reporting. So I would say that that's probably in for them, but hopefully really what's in it for them is helping all of us.
We'll be right back. Listen up, we've got one last chance to double your impact when you donate during this May fundraiser. It's Match Monday, and the Investors Challenge Fund is matching donations today only up to $25,000. We need to put every dollar of these funds to use for our newsroom in the months ahead so we can keep you and people across the country informed. Give right now and generously, please, at marketplace.org/givetech.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Marketplace Tech. I'm Lily Jamali. We're back with Joanna Stern, senior personal technology columnist at The Wall Street Journal.
On to our third and final story. At its Let Loose event on Tuesday, Apple unveiled a suite of new iPads with a dizzying set of features. We actually have a video from the event. Let's take a quick look at that.
The 11-inch Pro is 5.3 millimeters thin, and the 13-inch Pro is an incredible 5.1 millimeters thin. Compared to the previous iPad Pro, the difference is striking.
So there we see two of the models that have been released by Apple. Walk me through the others, Joanna.
Yes, I mean, I can take you through this, but what you just heard was the iPad Pro line, which is now absolutely the priciest, most premium version of the iPad. In fact, it is really honestly a laptop replacement at this point. And they made a huge deal about the chip inside, this M4 chip, which is the first time we're seeing the M4 chip on this new iPad or any new Apple products. It's going to be great for AI. It's going to be great for productivity. It's going to be great for all these things. So you've got the iPad Pro, and those come in two sizes, the 11-inch and the 13. So those are already two iPads we've got there. Then you want to take a step down, you get to the iPad Air level, and they introduce two sizes on the iPad Air, and that's 11-inch and 13-inch. So that brings us to 4 iPads. And just to be clear about the Air, what they're trying to do there is say, okay, you don't want to pay for the premium pros. Okay, that's fine. We've got the Air for you. You can get a laptop, you can get a keyboard to go with it. You can use the pen. You get all the goodness, but it doesn't have that super fast processor. It doesn't have that brand new screen. And so that's the Air line. Then you want to go down a little bit more. You can go to the regular iPad. So that's what most would probably buy for their kids. And then you take a step down from that and you're at the iPad mini.
All right. And one thing that we have to talk about is just how thin these iPads are. You compare it to a piece of gum. How big of a deal is this, the thinness aspect to it? Because I think there's a lot of iPad users out there who kind of felt forgotten. There hadn't been a lot of new announcements about the iPad in quite a while. Is this the big headline here?
I mean, look, I got to see these things and hold them after this event, and they are so thin. Like, it is shockingly thin. It truly feels like just holding a screen in your hand. The kind of question is with the Pro especially, I mean, if you are writing or sketching on it, yes, that thinness, that lightness really does come into play, but how thin do you really need your iPad to be, right? And this is the kind of the situation where we've gotten in tech is like, we got really thin a number of years ago. Like, who has been asking for thinner? And so, this is the thinning of the iPad the selling point for that one? No, but it definitely enhances that entire premium product.
And were there any features that you were hoping would be included here that weren't after so many years of anticipation?
I think the biggest thing with the iPad, and it wasn't really addressed, is that the operating system hasn't necessarily come along with the power of the internal hardware. And so you look at that iPad Pro line, you say, okay, I might want to buy that instead of a MacBook Air, or I might want to buy that instead of a MacBook Pro even, but you're stuck with an iPad OS that isn't exactly as flexible. It doesn't have a desktop. The file system is, there are things that you feel like you can really do on a Mac or on a Windows PC that you don't necessarily get with the iPad OS.
That was Joanna Stern at the Wall Street Journal. You can find the full video of this episode of Marketplace Tech Bytes Week in Review on our YouTube channel, Marketplace APM, and subscribe if you haven't already to watch us every Friday. Daniel Shin produced this episode. Jesus Alvarado and Rosie Hughes also produce our show. Lydia Ayeno is our intern. Becca Weinman is our engineer this week. Daisy Palacios is our senior producer. Kelly Silvera is our executive producer. I'm Lily Jamali, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.